Without community living, what do we have? People don't see me as a human being. They don't see me as deserving services.
We as American citizens are supposed to be able to work hard and get a good education, all of this stuff, to build the life that we want or that we do deserve. It's something that's seemingly simple, right?
This is the Disability Visibility Podcast with your host, Alice Wong.
My name is Alice Wong, and I'm the host of the Disability Visibility Podcast. Conversations on disability politics, culture, and media. Medicaid is a primary payer of what's known as home and community-based services. For me, these services allow me to have people help me get out of bed, take a shower, almost everything. Freedom means something different for disabled people on Medicaid. At least, that's my perspective. There are disabled people all over the United States that have to live in institutions because of their needs or the lack of services in the community. Plus, many folks still don't imagine or expect severely disabled people to have families, careers, or their own homes. Today, I'm talking with Dominic Evans and Andrea Levant about Medicaid and community living. Community living is a concept that disabled people, despite their level of care needs, have the right to live in the community with adequate support services that they can direct on their own. Being on Medicaid isn't a choice for people like Dominic, Andrea, and me. All three of us rely on Medicaid-funded personal attendant care for our everyday activities. It can be a soul-crushing grind. Andrea lives in Maryland, and Dominic lives in Ohio. While each state administers Medicaid differently, they both fought to get the services they needed and expended significant labor to remain eligible and, frankly, alive. One thing to note, in this episode, we discuss how Medicaid is a poverty trap. And it is. Medicaid's rules on assets and income are strict. You have to live near poverty to participate in the program. This keeps disabled people from pursuing their life goals just because they need personal assistance. So, what does it mean when your well-being and freedom is tied to a single program? Why do disabled people have to make trade-offs on how they want to live in exchange for pure survival? Let's hear from Dominic first. Are you ready?
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Away we go.
I'm a filmmaker, and I spend much of my time working as an activist through my creative work, as well as through the work I do for the Center for Disability Rights as a media and entertainment advocate, and my own personal activism as well.
You used to live in another state, and then you moved back to Ohio. It is really hard to reapply for services that you need because they vary from state to state.
It really has been a struggle. Around 2014, I got a job opportunity in New York. And when we moved to New York, it wasn't until I appealed the decision that they decided to give me the hours I needed. My son is also disabled. They kept telling him he wasn't eligible for Medicaid services, even though he was on Medicaid. And we moved back to Ohio because there were better services here for him. For me, it's been a real struggle. I moved back to Ohio in October, and services are still not right. I depend on home care for dressing, bathing, going to the bathroom, getting into my wheelchair, eating and cooking and cleaning. I strongly suspect that because I'm transgender, that was the reason they did not want to approve me, because my paperwork was littered with horrible, horrible assessments about me being not a man. I'm legally male, but the assessment was about how I'm a person dressing up as a man. You think it would be pertinent to mention that I've had spinal fusion, that I've had problems with my stomach, things like that, that intersect with my disability. But what they did mention on the paperwork was that I had sex change operations. I feel like we constantly have to explain everything about our lives and why we need services and why we benefit from services. And it's exhausting. I even had a hearing in which I had to sit and listen to a guy defend why I don't deserve home care. Part of it is because I live with a quote-unquote roommate who should be forced to do all my care, ignoring the fact that anybody I live with, they can't have another job. So the state wants them to work for free, to do a full-time job of care for me, and not have the ability to work. We would never be able to afford our rent or food. It's not at all lawful here in Ohio to request your roommate to do this without getting paid. I went to the program Buckeye. I was able to get someone out to evaluate me. And she said I needed as many hours as I needed before. They have a record. I was on Buckeye before. They know what I need. They gave me home care, but they're now saying I deserve half the amount of hours.
You and I and Andrea all have progressive disabilities, so our needs are always going to be growing, if not staying the same. You know, it's very arbitrary and outright discrimination.
Yeah, exactly. Right now, with my current hours, I can go to the bathroom once a day. Once a day. I can eat one meal. They think that I can just have a snack without this access. I'm going to end up in a nursing home. My best friend, my sister, I don't have family, but this is my sister. She's trapped in a nursing home because something happened where she had to leave her home. And she's been fighting for 2 years to get out of a nursing home. She's neglected in the nursing home. She'll message me sometimes on Facebook at 1 a.m. telling me to call the nursing home because her call light will not come on. And she needs help. They're taking 90% of her income for the nursing home. That's what they do. If you get Social Security or SSDI, they take 90% of it. So getting her into an apartment is not that easy when you need a security deposit, you know, things like that. The Olmstead ruling says that if she is eligible for care and can live in her own community, which she did fine prior to getting trapped in a situation she couldn't help, it says she should be able to have that care. We filed an Olmstead report for her, and she got an email saying, we don't have the resources to help you. That reality could become mine very quickly.
Especially this past year, we've all been acutely aware that we're all one step away from incarceration in a nursing home. And a lot of people without disabilities think nursing homes are great because there'll always be somebody there 24/7. So many non-disabled people don't even realize what community living can do and what it offers.
Community living allows me to have a job. It allows me to live with people I care about. Essentially, I feel like we go to nursing homes to die.
You're in an institution you basically give up any sense of privacy, any sense of, you know, decision making. Older adults also, they can live with the right supports in the community. It's not just about younger disabled people in nursing homes, but I think one of the underlying things that we've been talking about is really about ableism and how it shows up in policies and programs.
Ableism certainly plays a role in all of this. When you're multiply marginalized, your identities kind of compound on one another. Like for me, I think transphobia and queer phobia are also playing a role. Being a transgender disabled person has had a much more devastating effect on my ability to have care and also knowing that I'm safe, you know? So many people have told me, you're a freeloader, you're lazy, we shouldn't have to pay for you. Some people have even suggested that people like us should be euthanized. And also just witnessing the way race and racism plays in. My friend G is a Black woman, and we've had a lot of discussions, not just her, but me with other disabled people of color, we've talked about how white people are different about elder Americans or, you know, their grandparents, you know, and we see cultures, especially in communities of color, where parents, you know, feel it's their obligation to care for their grandparents and their great grandparents, you know, and it's an honor. G has said, you know, her family hasn't been able to afford to take care of her. And there's a lot of guilt there, you know, because families are expected to. As a white person, I don't think that there's always that loyalty.
So, Dominic, if you had a magic wand, can you transform the Medicaid's community-based services, not just in Ohio, but everywhere, what would it look like?
I think that it would be a streamlined system that was federal so that we could move between states. PCAs would get paid above a living wage. A lot of the home care workers are women of color, overwhelmingly, and they deserve a living wage. Also, the cost of our care, we're talking at least $100,000 per year, per person, to put us in a nursing home. So for most of us, our care is equal or less than that. For me, it's less than that. So it's cheaper to keep us in home. So unless we're making, you know, $250,000 or more, I don't think that they should be looking at our income specifically for home care. It not only limits our ability to have care and to work, it limits our ability to get married because our spouse's income is included. For some states, it's like if you make $28,000 and you're a family, you can't get home care. We need to be able to have jobs and not have our home care affected. And also, it seems redundant for you and I to go through evaluations every single year. My SMA is not going away. Is yours?
Not anytime soon.
And it's just a waste of taxpayer money. It's a waste of time.
I would love it if non-disabled people would just, like, really get a sense of, like, would you put up with this? Fuck no. So why would you tolerate this for anybody else?
This is life or death for me. And I don't think a lot of people connect that. I think they just think we're a bunch of angry, yelling, you know, kind of
unreasonable, overdramatic,
like whiny,
self-pitying people that You know, so self-evolved.
If you give me the things I need, I would just live my life, because that's what I want. I just want to live my life.
Everybody deserves to have choices. Right now, for us, choice is a privilege. So, Dominic, how can people find you if they want to check out what you do?
My Twitter handle is Dominic, DominicK, Evans, EVANS, or you can look through my website, Dominic Evans, same spelling, .com.
Thank you so much for joining me today, Dominic. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And now, my conversation with Atreya.
I currently live in the state of Maryland. I work in Washington, D.C. I've always worked in the nonprofit arena for both national and local nonprofits in youth development and leadership, specifically focusing on young people with disabilities.
So tell me, what does Medicaid mean to you and to your life?
Medicaid is, it really is livelihood that allows me to remain just who I feel that I am. The services that I use, personal care attendant services, is literally somebody coming and getting me out of bed every day, prepping me for work, you know, helping me with all the activities of daily living, bathing, dressing, grooming. You know, when I turned 18, I became a recipient of SSI, Supplemental Security Income. I had that through college, and then for a year, I served as an AmeriCorps member. So I was in the state of Tennessee after college. In Tennessee, the Medicaid services came in. When I moved to the state of Maryland, you know, I went to the Social Security office, let them know I'm working now, and, you know, I still need personal care services. It took 2 years to actually have assistance. I literally had friends helping me for a couple of years. And I still was paying out of pocket for a while. Something that I consider a lot here living in this area is that I pay a lot more for housing because it needs to be accessible and it needs to be near public transportation. That with that, that adds expense as well.
Earlier this year, you actually had to launch a crowdfunding campaign to make up for the loss in services.
About the second week of June, I received a call from the agency that my caregivers come from, basically saying that I was showing up in the system as ineligible for services. I have a case manager of sorts, a support planner. She said, oh, this is interesting because I just looked on the 1st of June and you were showing up as eligible, but it looks like they've backdated you. I got a letter a little later basically saying that you're not a recipient of SSI and your income doesn't qualify you for Medicaid, which made no sense to me because my income has not vastly changed, nor have I've been a recipient of SSI in the state of Maryland. So I was sharing the story with some coworkers as well, and they were like, Andrea, we really would love to help. Please, you know, start a crowdfunding campaign. It was one of the most difficult things I've ever had to do because I have to put myself completely out there. Looking back on it, I'm grateful that I did it, but it was certainly hard to say, I need help. Oh my goodness, the biggest headaches, quite frankly, the biggest headaches. Trying to get answers and brought in the senator's office, Senator Van Hollen, Chris Van Hollen. It just has been, it's a mess. Basically, the senator's office was able to get an appeal hearing set up for me. Technically, when you get an appeal, the services are supposed to start back while you wait for a judgment. However, I'm still paying out of pocket because the systems are just, it's such that I'm still showing as pending. And so it won't allow anybody to serve me. I don't have a formal lawyer, but I've certainly had access to, you know, both national and local organizations that have helped me. So I have a lot greater understanding.
The mistake is on their part, but it's like the burden of proving your innocence is on you.
Yeah, it takes so much. It takes a lot out of you. Literally the day before the appeal hearing, I received a call from the appeals representative. And he verified a few things and then sent me his summary, in essence, the evidence that they will use to prove that I am not eligible for Medicaid. They're saying that I'm not eligible for Medicaid because I don't make under the poverty line. I've never in the state of Maryland made under the poverty line. They also, for whatever reason, had included my income as they coded it, saying that my income was food stamps. Never, ever in my entire life have I received food stamps. What I did is basically shared with the judge and the appeals representative, this is why I know that I'm eligible for Medicaid. Both of them were equally as surprised, like they had never heard. And I thought it was very interesting for the appeals representative who works for, you know, Medicaid that seemed to be very surprised. The thing is, it's very obvious that they were wrong. So I'm hanging in the balance every day and continuing to pay for services until I find out.
Well, it is great that there was, you know, a pretty strong response by the disability community for transparency. I am somebody who donated to your campaign. We see a lot of crowdfunding going on for all kinds of needs. We're still completely unsupported by our country, our government. And you know, this is a huge human rights issue, I think, where we live in such a, you know, quote-unquote, wealthy country, and we still can't get it together to allow disabled people to really be fully integrated and fully participatory in our society. How does that make you feel in terms of, I guess, the, you know, reaction and the support you got from your campaign, but also realizing that there's so many other people in your same situation that may not, you know, have a campaign, may not be connected to the community, may not use social media and, you know, have access to all these resources.
Right, right. And thank you so much. I'm so grateful. It hurts. It really, really hurts when I see, you know, where people are saying, you know, I'm, you know, in my 20s, and I'm already considering nursing homes because my parents are not able to, you know, assist me anymore. You know, I have family. I have a sibling who is younger than I am, but she's built a life down south when I consider having to drop everything that I've worked hard for to move down to Florida, you know, and I'm grateful for my family, but that's the life that they chose. You know, I was able to raise quite a bit of money in a very short amount of time, but it stayed at that point. I still only have about 3 months worth. I don't have much time left.
If you could have a magic wand and redesign Maryland's services, how they administer Medicaid and community-based services, what would the ideal program look like in terms of how they treat disabled people and poor people?
The biggest thing is the concept of consumer-directed services. I think it's thrown around like that actually happened, you know? If it was really implemented, then I think that would, you know, help so much, where the person with a disability really is the one that's, you know, making the decisions. And obviously the income, I know very few people that have an extra $30,000 or more sitting around.
So, you know, you and I are both, you know, our lives are tied to this program because of our, you know, our needs for assistance being tied to Medicaid has, you know, completely reshaped, you know, our decisions and our choices.
Mm-hmm. Even if I wanted to move to literally a mile or two down the road to D.C. or, you know, over to Virginia, oh my goodness, I was thinking about the headache of applying for services again in a different state. You know, what if I want to own property and want to own a rental property and things like that are counted? You know, even your retirement, you know, preparing for your future. All of those things, stocks, bonds, anything that you have is counted.
And I think that's part of the labor that most people really have no idea about in terms of just the thinking through of everything. And it's really sad when, like, you know, we have our, you know, not disabled friends who are like, oh, you know, you should go for this, you should go for that. And they don't realize how hard this shit is. And, like, in a lot of ways, it's like the most, like, you know, biggest messages that people get to disabled people, right? Like, you know, we all have worth, that we all, if we all tried hard enough, you know, we would get our place in the sun. But sometimes I think with these asset and income limitations, it's really not true because, you know, there's no way for us to move beyond if we are still tied to this poverty trap that is Medicaid.
Absolutely. It's just, oh my goodness, it's so disturbing.
This current administration that we're living under, you know, we've seen a blatant attempt to destroy the safety net, starting with the Affordable Care Act and the obvious, you know, attack to undermine Medicaid. And you've been very prominent in terms of, you know, speaking at various events, you know, trying to protest, you know, sharing your story with a lot of different organizations and groups.
It's been interesting because, you know, I started the conversation, you know, months ago, was asked to just speak about, you know, Medicaid and why Medicaid matters, you know, to me, sharing that story. And then my services were cut. I'm over here fighting a little more quietly for my own stuff every day. And then advocating on a larger scale for Medicaid that I, at the current moment, you know, is not active for me. Not only is it important for me, it's important for so many other people.
You know, when I say it's a perfect program, we of all people know the problems with Medicaid. The fact that the Republicans want to decimate
it. Right, exactly.
That is not helping the situation. That would be the worst for billions of people. Not just disabled people, but obviously children, poor people, older people. Of course there are problems. How does we destroy it?
Right.
Why can't, you know, states really get more people with disabilities in part of the system to have those folks as the ones administrative services.
Yeah.
Do you see yourself as an activist?
I generally am one that doesn't like to ruffle feathers. I like to pretty much be, you know, just supportive. I think that the current situation has made me an activist, and I'm proud to take that on now. This is definitely not something that I would have chosen to do, but sometimes you're put in a position where you have to, and that's where I'm at, you know?
Yeah. I think people with disabilities have always been, you know, on the barges, always fighting, but yet I think something is different this year. I mean, I think in this administration, things are really magnified.
You know, there's so many conversations, education reform, obviously there's healthcare, just equality, and in general, you know, myself as a Black woman with a disability, you know, that carry multiple minority status, I don't see it getting any clearer anytime soon. And so if I'm given opportunity to, or if I have to create a space to continue to make my voice heard, that in an effort to affect change, then that's what I will do.
Well, thank you so much, Andrea. I guess the last question is, if anybody wants to hit you up and find you online, how can people do that?
I am found the same way all over social media, Andrea Levant. And there's that extra A that a lot of times people miss. It's A-N-D-R-A-E-A, Levant, L-A, V as in Victor, A, N as in Nancy, T as in Tom. But at Andrea Levant on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Same for my email, AndreaLevant@gmail.com.
Thank you, Andrea.
Thank you so much.
This podcast is a production of the Disability Visibility Project, an online community dedicated to creating, sharing, and amplifying disability media and culture. All episodes, including text transcripts, are available at disabilityvisibilityproject.com/podcast. You can also find links about Andrea, Dominic, and Community Living on our website as well. The audio producer for this episode is Cheryl Green. Introduction by Latif McLeod. Theme music by Wheelchair Sports Camp. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the Disability Visibility Podcast on iTunes. You can also support the work of Creating Disabled Media at our Patreon page at patreon.com/DVP. That's patreon.com/DVP. Thanks for listening. See you on the internet. They wanna give a girl hell.